It's 7:44 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Teresa Wills. This morning, a story about the effects of the rising cost of insulin for diabetics.
I got a phone call from my mom saying that Alec was found in his apartment and that he had passed away.
We'll hear about that, as well as an interview with an engineer who has developed ways to fight cholera outbreaks. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. First, these headlines. The National Weather Service has issued flood warnings in West Virginia through the next few days. Liz McCormick has more from the Eastern Panhandle.
Berkeley, Jefferson, and Morgan counties are all under a flood warning. The Opequan Creek near Martinsburg and the Potomac River are in flood stage and are expected to remain so for 24 to 48 hours. The National Weather Service has also issued a hazardous weather outlook for Berkeley, Jefferson, Morgan, Hampshire, Hardy, Grant, Mineral, and Pendleton counties. It will remain in effect through Sunday. Officials with Jefferson County Emergency Management report that despite high water throughout the region, no major issues have been reported. Emergency management staff are shifting focus to preparation for the potential impacts from Hurricane Florence. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Liz McCormick in Shepherdstown.
Emergency managers continue to monitor the Ohio River for flooding. The river is expected to crest this afternoon at around 40 feet. A normal river level around this time of the year is about 16 feet. Meanwhile, state emergency managers expect Hurricane Florence to hit southern West Virginia at the end of this week. They've been working to station swift water rescue teams and the National Guard, as well as other resources in those areas. A pretrial conference is set for today for four West Virginia Supreme Court justices who were named in articles of impeachment adopted by the House of Delegates last month. As Dave Mistich reports, pretrial motions have been filed in the state Senate, which will act as a court of impeachment.
An attorney representing Chief Justice Margaret Workman has filed a motion for Workman's trial to not begin before October 15th. That motion cites the amount of evidence to be obtained and reviewed by the defense and prosecution, a group of delegates known collectively as a board of managers. It also asks for the adoption of a schedule to allow for additional motions and other actions by Workman's defense. Justice Beth Walker's attorney is asking for her case to be dismissed. She was named in only one article of impeachment, Article 14, which accuses the four justices of failing to provide administrative oversight of the court. The motion to dismiss calls Article 14 a quote-unquote catch-all, outlining collective conduct of the court that fails to charge Walker with anything as an individual. Four justices of the state's high court were named throughout 11 articles of impeachment that the House of Delegates adopted on August 13th. The articles of impeachment charge the justices individually for their roles in lavish spending on office renovations, authorizing the overpayment of senior status judges, and failing to provide administrative oversight. Former Justice Robin Davis and suspended Justice Alan Laufrey were also named in adopted articles of impeachment and are set to stand trial. Davis retired one day after the articles were adopted by the House. Acting Chief Justice Paul Farrell, who was appointed by Chief Justice Workman, will preside over the impeachment trials. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Dave Mistich.
An explosion along a recently completed natural gas pipeline destroyed a home and prompted evacuations in Beaver County, Pennsylvania, yesterday morning. No injuries were reported. The Revolution Pipeline, a 24-inch gathering line owned by Energy Transfer Partners, only began transporting gas last week. Chuck Belzik lives on Ivy Lane in Center Township and was among the 25 homes to be evacuated when the blast occurred at 5 a.m.
I mean, my initial thought was a jet airplane crash. Then I heard a hissing going, and that's when it all hit us what was happening. You know, right away you knew the pipeline went.
The fire was extinguished after the flow of gas to the pipeline was cut off. Officials said a landslide may have caused the explosion. The price of insulin is going up. It's more than doubled since the year 2012 alone. That's put the life-saving hormone out of reach for a growing number of diabetics who rely on it to live. Bram Sable-Smith has been reporting on these prices for a side effect public media podcast called The Workaround. He spoke with a mother who knows the story all too well.
When Nicole Smith Holt's son was 23, he started feeling sick.
Feeling lethargic, feeling like he was having muscle cramps, getting up a lot during the night to go to the bathroom.
Her son, Alec, went to the urgent care where he was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. Most people's pancreases produce insulin, which regulates the amount of sugar in your blood. But for type 1 diabetics, that production stops. Alec had to start buying insulin at a pharmacy and injecting it into his body. He also had to change the way he ate.
I think that was the part that frustrated him the most, was having to change his diet so drastically.
Life goes on after a diabetes diagnosis. Alec learned to take his insulin. He kept working as a manager at a Minneapolis Mongolian barbecue restaurant. He still took trips to Wisconsin to buy cheap fireworks. He was still a father, a brother, a son, a friend. He was living his 20s, until he wasn't.
I got a phone call from my mom saying that Alec was found in his apartment and that he had passed away.
His family thinks he was rationing insulin, taking less than he needed to try to make it last longer. Rationing is a dangerous practice, but one in four diabetics admits to having done it. Insulin prices are a big reason why. They nearly tripled between 2002 and 2013 and have nearly doubled again since then. For Alec, the price of insulin became an issue in 2017 when he turned 26 and aged off his mother's insurance plan.
He had gone to the pharmacy prior to losing my insurance to get an estimate of, you know, how much he should plan for. And when they told him $1,300.
That's $1,300 every month without insurance, mostly for insulin. His insurance options were not much better. His $35,000 salary was too high for Medicaid, too high for insurance subsidies. What he found was a plan that cost $450 a month with a $7,600 deductible, meaning he'd still be spending nearly $2,000 out of pocket each month. Alec decided going uninsured would be more manageable.
That's a hard decision to make. If I was in his spot, I probably would do the same thing.
He died less than a month after losing his insurance. He'd used up all of his insulin, and his mother thinks he was trying to make it to payday, which was just 3 days away.
He didn't even get to go to the pharmacy one time to pay the $1,300 out of pocket.
There are many reasons why insulin prices are rising so high. Patents have pretty much kept generics off the market. Middlemen in the supply chain take their cuts. The Eli Lilly Company, one of the three insulin makers who dominate the American market, did not make anyone available for an interview. But a spokesman noted the rise of high-deductible health plans, like the one Alec found, is exposing more patients to higher prices. These days, Nicole Smith Holt is outspoken about her son's story. In August, she went to Washington to testify at a hearing on drug prices put on by Senate Democrats. She reminded them that insulin was created almost 100 years ago.
But here we are in 2018 and facing a death sentence once again because the cost of the life-saving medication is priced out of reach for far too many.
So far, there's not been much change on the price of insulin from the industry or Congress or the Trump administration. But Smith Holt hopes her son's story can help change that. Bram Sable Smith, Side Effects Public Media.
That story comes from a Side Effects Public Media podcast called The Workaround. Antar Jutla is a professor of civil and environmental engineering at WVU. Jutla has been instrumental in developing a computer program that has helped predict and prevent the spread of cholera in war-torn Yemen. Kara Lofton spoke with Jutla about how supercomputers and data can impact the spread of waterborne diseases after both natural and man-made disasters.
Cholera is a disease, and it's a highly infectious disease that is caused by drinking water contaminated with Vibrio cholerae. And there are a couple of pathogenic strains in the world that causes this this disease in human population. The disease is often fatal if it is not treated properly within 24 hours. With the advancement in water infrastructure, like safe drinking water and sanitation facilities, the cholera cases have been down in regions where we have robust water infrastructure. But it remains a concern for regions where the water infrastructure is weak or it cannot sustain the needs of human population. So we have been working on finding solutions to predicting water and vector-borne infections for over 10 years now. So my doctoral studies was also on waterborne infectious diseases. Then after that, like, I basically carried on with this work and tried to find out new and innovative ways within the domain of civil and environmental engineering as to how we can find smarter solutions to save human population. We presented a conference paper last year at American Geophysical Union, and it was reported in Scientific American. And after that, a couple of scientists approached me that they're interested to look into our algorithms and try to see if we can really use it in places where there is nothing, there is no decision making. And they were already working in Yemen. So that's how the collaboration started. And they wanted us to predict or provide them with the risk maps, at least like relatively in like 4 or 5 weeks. And we had algorithms prepared. And that's how everything started.
Are waterborne diseases a third world problem exclusively, or do we see them in the U.S. as well?
Oh, no, we do see, so waterborne infections can become issues in those regions where there is a natural disaster and it affects the water distribution systems. So if there is an extreme event, extreme weather events like hurricanes or earthquakes that damages the water infrastructure, then the chance of waterborne infections in any region of the world is high. As of now, we do not have this kind of risk in the more developed regions where we have emergency plans and where we have standard protocols for any prevention or mitigation strategies. These policies like mitigation or intervention strategies are usually absent in developing regions. To summarize, I will say that waterborne infections can happen anywhere. It's basically how we are going to deal and make policies on providing safe water and sanitation infrastructure is something that we are going to. It's going to dictate whether a particular region will have an infection or not. And the other thing that I want to point out here is that cholera for us was a model disease, and it's a diarrheal infection. So, and since it was pretty fatal, that's why we started studying and predicting this disease in our work. If we can predict and prevent cholera, then the literature suggests that we are going to prevent another 20 to 22 types of waterborne infections from the human population. So by preventing or by making policies to prevent one infection, we are in fact going to help human population against several other waterborne infections.
We are seeing a spike in natural disasters worldwide. Can this model be replicated for any location where water infrastructure breaks down?
The short answer is yes. We have used this model in Africa, Asia, Latin America, and now in Yemen. So the model can be replicated anywhere in the world. Simply because we have a continuous data from NASA satellites. Said that, there is a human element to prediction as well, which means that if we produce a risk, then we need to understand how people are moving and how the intervention strategies are being carried out in a particular region. Yes, the model can replicate in anywhere in the world.
Again, that was Antar Jutla, professor of civil and environmental engineering at WVU, speaking with health reporter Carol Lofton. Appalachia Health News is a project of West Virginia Public Broadcasting with support from Marshall Health, Charleston Area Medical Center, and WVU Medicine. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.